The Committee on Public Integrity and Elections will come to order. Sanjay, please call the roll.
Representative Perez.
Here.
Representative Smith.
Here.
Representative Thompson. Representative Barterman.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Byrd.
Here.
Clemens.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Grawl.
Here.
Ngoglia.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Coster. Excused. Lamarca.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Silvers.
Here.
Stevenson. Tant.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
A quorum is present, sir.
Thank you, Sanjay. Members, remember to put your phones on silent or vibration. It is important, real quick, before we start, I did want to mention that Representative Grant is assigned as the ex officio member for today's committee. We have three bills today. We have two PCBs and one member bill. We're going to start with the member bill with Representative Drake, House Bill 921, Limitations on Political Contributions. And there is a strike call, Representative Drake, so let's get right to the strike call first.
Thank you, Chairman Perez and members of the committee. You know, things that we thought might have been in the law that are actually are not. House Bill 921 kind of fits that description. So U.S. federal law prohibits contributions by foreign entities to candidates for political office. However, it does not prohibit foreign entities from contributing to ballot initiatives. That's part one. House Bill 921 will work to address that. Part two limits non-resident contributions to initiative petition circulation efforts. That's the second part. And then part three allows the amendment limits non-resident contributions to initiative petition circulation efforts while also holding that foreign citizenship are exempt if you're dual resident.
Members, are there any questions? Seeing none, is there any public testimony? Yeah, we have no public testimony on the amendment. Any debate? Members, any debate? All in favor of the amendment, the strike call amendment, please say yay. By your vote, the amendment passes. Now let's on the bill as amended. On the bill as amended. Is there any questions, members? Any questions on the bill as amended? Seeing none, any public testimony? No. Is there anyone from the audience that wishes to speak on this bill? Any debate, members? Any debate? Seeing none, Representative Drake, you are recognized to close.
I'll wave close.
Sanjay, please count the votes, please.
Representative Perez?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Barterman?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Byrd?
Yes.
Clemens?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Grawl?
Yes.
Ngoglia?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Coster? Excuse. Lamarca?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Silver?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tan?
Yes.
Representative Valdez?
Yes.
Representative Grant?
Yes.
Congratulations, Representative Drake. The vote passes and your bill passes as amended. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman Perez and members.
At this time, I'm going to pass the gavel to Vice Chair Smith.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. We have two PCBs that will be presented this afternoon, and I know If like you, I've received over probably 500 emails already this afternoon. So both passionate on either side of the issue. So I can just tell you on a 54-page bill, we probably, this might not be the right forum to get too in the weeds. So if we can allow the review of the staff analysis and work with the staff if you have in-depth questions. But let's certainly try to hit the wave tops. And I want to make sure we have enough time. We do have quite a few people want to speak publicly. We certainly want to give that time, and we will keep moving. And yes, we will do PCB 2205. Chair Perez, you're recognized to present your PCB.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Members, this is a fairly simple bill. This bill would allow for free identification cards for those that have financial hardship, or those that are over the age of 80 and who have failed the required vision test. That is the bill.
Okay, and do we have any questions on the PCB? Okay, Rep. Bartleman, you're recognized.
Yes, I just have a question, and I don't know if you can expand this at all, but one of the issues we had in our district was seniors being able to get just even a driver's license with the long lines. I know there was an issue where it was showcased on the news, people waiting 4 hours to get their Florida ID renewed or their driver's license, and it was especially a hardship for the elderly. And since you're creating this law, which I think is great, to help them, is there anything we can do to expedite that? Because although it's free, there were many seniors in my community that they were sitting at the DMV for 4 or 5 hours, and if there is an easier way to create a streamline, maybe not in this bill, but for discussions, to streamline them getting it when you do implement this, because it's very difficult for them to sit in the sun for 4 or 5 hours or in the rain. Sure. And that happens in my district quite frequently. Thank you.
All right, we have any other questions? We'll move into a public testimony. We have one, Zane Smith from AARP waves in support. No other public testimony. Now in debate. Members in debate. Seeing no debate, Sanjay, please call the roll. Oh, Sanjay, oh, you're clear to close on your.
Thank you, Chair Smith. I'm going to close quickly, but more so to answer Representative Bartleman's question. Currently, there's a process for them to go through an appointment process locally. I know in Miami that is the case. If that's not the case in other parts of the state, it's a conversation we can have after today. With that,
all right. Sanjay, please call the roll.
Representative Chair. Representative Perez.
Yes.
Representative Thompson.
Yes.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Bartleman.
Yes.
Brannon.
Yes.
Byrd.
Yes.
Clemens.
Yes.
Daly.
Yes.
Graul.
Yes.
Ngoglia.
Yes.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Coster, excused. Lamarca.
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Silvers?
Yes.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
And Representative Grant?
Yes.
Bill passes.
Sir. All right, by your vote, the bill passes, and we will move on to the next next bill. We'll go to PCB 2203. You're recognized to present your bill.
Thank you, Chair Smith. Thank you, members. So this bill improves our state elections by better maintaining our voter registration lists, protecting vote-by-mail ballots through additional security measures, and increasing enforcement around election law violations. More specifically, the improvement to registration list maintenance would include ensuring better list by requiring that the supervisor of elections confirm residential addresses of all voters annually. Currently, it is done every other year. In addition, the improvements to the vote-by-mail system will increase security in the following ways: adding a voter certificate and envelope separate from the mailing envelope, but this would not begin until 2024. The reason that we did it until 2024, among several reasons, most importantly, is to make sure that we give people the opportunity to receive these identification cards on behalf of the state if they choose to do so, as it will be part of the vote by mail process in a different manner than it is today. In addition, we'll require an identification number on the certificate, in addition to the voter's signature, which would also begin in 2024. And lastly, the improvements to protecting against election law crimes, amongst many reasons, creating a new election security office in the Department of State focused on election-related crimes and assigning additional FDLE agents to investigate election crimes. And that is the bill.
Okay, thank you, Rep. And we do have two amendments. And Rep. Thompson, you're recognized to present your First Amendment, and that's 2203A1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would simply waive fines that are 20 years old or older in terms of financial obligations.
All right, do we have any on the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, I think we have no public testimony. Oh, a question on the amendment.
To the bill presenter, is this a friendly amendment?
Through the chair, thank you for that question, Representative Grant. This is not a friendly amendment, and I think it's important that I explain why. Within this bill, we have distinctive language that is going to force the clerk in each county to provide the Department of State with information as to where the fees are, how much they are on a monthly basis, who are the people that have been convicted of felonies, who are those that cannot vote. We are now going to do that on a monthly basis to make sure that the roll call on this list is actually caught up with. At the same time, it is important to note that a judgment of the court, which would be the equivalent of the fees that are currently existing, regardless of the amount of years, is not something that we believe is constitutionally viable for the clerk to waive through its own process. And for that reason, this is not a friendly amendment.
Thank you, Rep, and thank you, Leader, on that one. Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate, all in favor of the amendment, say aye. All opposed? Or yay? Yay, sorry. All in favor, say yay. Yay. All in favor, or all against?
Nay.
Nay. I can't read my own script. Thank you very much. The amendment is defeated. Please present your second amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did want to close on the previous amendment, but we've already voted on it. The next amendment would restrict the use of information regarding individuals who provide non-United States citizenship in order to create a list that would prevent people from voting who are not United States citizens. And it would that information would not be provided to other governmental agencies. That's the amendment.
All right, thank you, Rep. And I guess, is this a friendly amendment? Can we?
This is, thank you, Chair. And although very friendly sponsor, this is not a friendly amendment, as we do believe any outside agency that wishes to receive this information, they either already have the access or they would be able to get it through a separate agency. We do not believe this would be an effective amendment. So no, this is not.
All right, thank you. Questions on the amendment? All right, seeing no questions. We have public testimony, no public testimony on this. Debate on the amendment. And you're clear, Rep, would you please close on your amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as we did when we considered sanctuary cities that did not and do not exist in the state of Florida, we did not want state agencies to become proxies for the federal government. And so that is the intent of this amendment. And with that, I close.
All right. Thank you, Rep. Okay. All in favor of the amendment say yay. All against say nay.
Nay. Nay.
The amendment is defeated. Back on the bill. All right. We are back on the bill. And are there questions on the bill? I see Rep. Bartleman. You're recognized for a question.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. And Chair, I have a question for you. I know I've spoken to you about this. The concern regards the secrecy envelope, adding an extra step, the why it's necessary now to add an additional hurdle to put the four numbers. Like, I think about how difficult it is, especially for our senior citizens who voting is so important. This is worse than filling out your publisher's clearinghouse, where you have to find all those stickers with the winning numbers and tape them on, or else your vote doesn't count. There's like a secrecy envelope. There's numbers that have to be outside. This envelope has to go this way. Isn't there a simpler way for our seniors who, you know, the greatest generation who we know, this is confusing for me. Is there an easier way for you to accomplish what you're trying to accomplish without all of these?
I fully understand the concern. It's a concern I think that we all have. We always want to make sure that our seniors can vote, and we want them to vote in the easiest yet safest way possible. But, you know, amongst the many problems that they encounter, some of the problems that we've seen locally is currently the certificate on the back, or the equivalent of their signature on the back of their certificate, is sometimes covered by something as simple as the flap of the envelope they are putting in. Sometimes it is being done incorrectly. And so we do believe that this would actually make it easier, although on the surface it may seem more difficult. We believe that the process is actually going to be more simpler, to be quite frank, for the elderly. And at the same time, it would be safer. The way it would work is the secrecy envelope would go inside the certificate, and inside the, and then the certificate envelope would go inside of the mailing envelope as it would go out.
Have a follow-up?
All right, thank you. Follow-up? Rep. Yeah, Bartleman, you're yes, recognized. Sir.
Okay, so just even your explanation, confusing. Why? I understand the flap issue, but let's get to the crux of the issue. If I use the wrong envelope, or if I accidentally don't put my four digits, does my vote count?
You're recognized.
The great thing that we have within this bill is that the opportunity to cure will always exist. So in the scenario that you just gave, in the unfortunate scenario that someone were to miss part of the instructions on how to submit their vote by mail, they would still have the opportunity to cure it. And they would have the opportunity to cure all the way up to Election Day, and even 2 days after Election Day, up to 5 p.m. 2 days afterwards, in order for them to cure the ballot that they submitted properly before the Election Day, even if there was a mistake like the one that you gave.
One more bite at the apple, Rep.
Oh, okay. Fine. I had more. Okay, let's go back to the cure thing, and then thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's go back to the cure thing. I don't see any, if the idea is to protect the vote of that person, there's mention of cure, but there isn't any specifics of how to ensure the cure. And if I mailed it to you, does this mean you're going to mail me another one? Because I'm homebound and I can't get out. I can't get to the office now to cure my envelope. Like, there are so many issues with the cure process. And if you really wanted to protect that vote, I would think it would be important to put, if my goal is to get every vote to count, and there are a lot of hurdles right now, wouldn't you just as importantly outline a very efficient and effective cure process for senior citizens who are homebound in this bill to show the intention of trying to make sure that we're trying to get their vote to cure? Because right now you're leaving it just out there. And there are going to be people at the next election who are going to be hurt by this. And we as a state government did not put provisions in to protect their ability to cure. We just mentioned it.
You're recognized.
Representative, that's a fair concern. It's a concern that we've thought about. And yes, those homebound individuals would have an opportunity to cure their own vote from wherever it is that they reside.
All right, continuing questions. Representative Valdez, you have a question.
Thank you, Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Rep. Perez, for bringing this bill forward here to have a discussion. One thing that causes me real pause is if you look on page 40 of the bill, line night item, it begins 960, and it goes all the way through 984. But most importantly, in section line 963, where we start at 960, where it says, unless you meet one of the exemptions in item 7, you must make a copy of one of the following forms of identification. And the identification must go into the envelope. And I'm, Well, when I vote, wait a minute, no.
Is there a question?
My question is, how do you see that happening? I mean, the way I understand this is that you must make a copy of your identification and put it in the secrecy envelope and then send it on in, is what I believe I'm reading here. And that's something that is, I vote by mail, and I've never done that.
You're recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Representative, for the question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that is current law. This is nothing new. We are not changing anything in this portion of the statute. That is already existing law. What we are doing is a part of the certificate, which maybe that is what you are alluding to, is on the back of the certificate, there will be a requirement for there to be the last four numbers of your Social Security, or the last four numbers of your license, or the last four numbers of your identification card. That is a requirement, along with your signature, that will have to be on the back of the certificate, which, remember, goes inside the mailing envelope.
All right, thank you, and Representative Tant for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you. You reached out to me today about questions that I've been running all day, Mr. Chair. So sorry about not being able to get to you. In respect to the new certificate or the other page ballot, and we have to have the code on there, the four-digit number on that, the certificate code. If the signature doesn't match or the code doesn't match, will there be time for a ballot cure?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Representative, there will be time. There will be time even for those that submitted on the day of the election. And as I stated, I believe it was to Representative Bartleman, we would have 2 days until after the election, up until 5 p.m. of that second day, in order for you to be able to cure that mishap that happens to many people, which I completely understand. So, yes, you would have an opportunity to cure with plenty of time.
Thank you. One more question?
Thank you. For a follow-up, you're recognized.
Thank you. In regards to the third envelope, I'm wondering if we can't condense this into just the privacy envelope, because I'm just thinking about the fiscal impact for our SOEs. So I'm just wondering what is the rationale for the third envelope?
You're recognized.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. Similar to the response that I gave to Representative Bartleman, if we go back to, for example, to the example that you used, just the secrecy envelope, we kind of run into the same problem that we currently have right now, which we're seeing many of our seniors specifically, they are covering with their flap where the information that is essentially going to go on the certificate after this bill passes is placed. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to separate both of them so that mishap doesn't happen. In addition, we also believe that it would be more secure to have that information on the back of the certificate along with their signature.
All right, thank you. And moving on to Rep. Daly for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the bill sponsor, Chairman. I'm sorry you reached out this morning, and like Representative Tan, I didn't get a chance to come back to you, but I did have a couple questions, particularly as it relates to the new Election Crimes and Security Division. So are you aware kind of how many cases of voting election, you know, voting or election irregularities have been reported over the last, election cycle?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I had the same question that you did. And so fortunately for me, we think alike, and I was able to look that up. But yes, the answer to your question is yes, and it is across multiple parts of the state. Another concern of mine is this happening in one part of the state as opposed to another. They have happened in a multitude of counties. There have been multiple convictions that have happened in different counties as well. Some of them have been in Miami, which were the ones that I was able to find. We had some in Brevard. So to answer your question, yes.
Rep. Daly, you're recognized for
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, and I'm glad to know we're on the same page. Just out of curiosity, do you have a ballpark of, like, how many we've seen in the last cycle?
You're recognized.
I wouldn't be able to give you a specific number because I'm sure there are some that I am missing, but it was not one or two or three. It was a multitude. As far as I had seen, it was in double digits.
And on a follow-up, Rep. Daly.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. And so is the current process for handling election-related issues that we just talked about, is that failing? And I guess the reason I ask is it's come out in the last couple months about the shadow candidate situation, the villages situation, the South Florida situation in Miami that came out I think today. So these seem to be getting tracked down, getting handled in the current process. Is the current process not working? Is that the reason we're choosing to go in this direction?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, yes, the current process is working. It is working better than it worked several years ago, thanks to the bill that we had passed last year with Representative Angolia. It is working better in comparison to the other states in this country, but it can improve. And that is what we are doing here. We are trying to improve to make sure that we have the right resources to ensure the Floridians that there isn't anything that's currently slipping through the cracks. And that's exactly what this bill will do. It will make sure that we don't have any cases of fraud slipping through the cracks.
Final question, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Rep. Dale, you're recognized.
Thanks, sir. And I certainly understand that, and in part would be inclined to agree with you. I guess my question is, how large do you envision this new entity being? What kind of cost do you think there's going to be associated? I noticed it says it's set in the budget process, but just kind of give us a ballpark if you would.
And you're recognized, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I wrote it down, and I'm by far a terrible mathematician, but what the numbers that I have here is, I remember we have two different breakdowns, or two different groups, two different departments that will have employees after this bill is passed. On the FDLE side, we would have an additional, or currently 10 sworn officers that they could be existing, but they would have new responsibilities based on the detail in this bill. But that in total, which they would be sworn officers, those 10 under the FDLE, would be a little over $1 million. And then on the Department of State side, it would be 15 in each subcategory. One would be 15 for the voter registration workload and making sure that we keep up with that and that there are no backlogs on it. And the other 15 would be for the Office of Elections Crime, which alludes to the question that you asked me a couple minutes ago. And that would be a little over $2 million. In total, the resources would be there, but we believe that there are resources that are necessary and that we would definitely get a phenomenal ROI so that we can assure ourselves that elections across the state are as fair and accurate as it can be.
All right. Thank you, Chair. And Rep. Thompson, you have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Perez. I'm concerned about duplication of effort. You just indicated that there would be 10 individuals in FDLE and 15 individuals within the Department of State to focus on the same issue. How will it be determined which of these offices are in charge of election crimes, should there be an instance of that?
You're recognized.
Well, the elections, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the elections office, the Office of Elections of Crime specifically, will have 15. Remember, those are more so investigators. They are not sworn. They are employees of the Department of State that would investigate the allegations that would come in order to further see if there are other necessities or a next step that is necessary. For example, if they need to send it to the sheriff's office or the state attorney's office, they would investigate. They would be the front line. It would be the first line of defense. On the FDLE side, those are sworn officers. And remember, there is a potential for these FDLE officers to have other responsibilities. So it doesn't necessarily have to be that they only focus on this. But they would also be working with the sheriffs. However, it wouldn't be on the investigative side. They would be more so on the state attorney side, a potential prosecution to make sure, although they wouldn't be doing the prosecuting, it'd be the state attorney, they would work in tangent with the state attorney's office and the sheriff's office if it is found that there is fraud that is taking place.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, does the governor have the authority currently to appoint individuals to investigate elections crimes?
If you care to answer that, it sounds like more like debate, but or outside the scope of the bill, but you're recognized to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
And one follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So back to the whole duplication of effort. The governor already has the authority to assign individuals to investigate elections fraud. So why then would it be necessary to establish yet another office to deal with elections crimes?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative, it's not so much another office in order for him to be able to appoint special officers. Without this bill going into its existence, he would be able to have an unlimited amount of appointments for special officers. What we are saying is that we are limiting it to 10 officers, depending on the region of the state, under FDLE that would accompany that specific officer that is appointed by the governor. So we are actually going from a place currently where there is no limitation to a 10-person limitation for tasks that have to do with FDLE and the elections.
And you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you. Representative, do the supervisors of elections support this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I have not had any calls from the supervisor of elections. I do not want to speak on their behalf. I would hope that they would support this. This is a good bill. That was their considerations, their responsibilities were taken into the process of coming up with this bill and putting this language together. So I don't want to speak on their behalf.
I see. Thank you.
Seeing no more questions, we'll move into public testimony. And first up, we have Alan Joseph representing himself. You're recognized, Mr. Joseph. You can keep it a couple, two, 3 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
I'll be fast.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, I'm not representing anyone. I'm a political science professor, recently retired. I taught at Florida State University and Tallahassee Community College. I actually worked at the legislature. Can you hear me?
Yeah, speak, maybe bring the mic a little bit closer.
Okay, thank you for letting me know that. Oh, yes, now I can hear myself speaking. I don't know if that's good or not.
We can hear you fine. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Alan Joseph. I'm a political science professor at Florida. I was a professor at Florida State University and Tallahassee Community College. I've retired from teaching, so I'm just volunteering my time if you have questions. Specifically, I would like to talk about instant runoff voting, or what you have here is ranked choice voting. So I'm only looking at Section 11 of the bill, and I just would like people to consider something. In political science, I mean, there really is a science to it, and we study these things. I know most people don't know very much about this, but what political scientists see is a method for the voters to actually be able to choose more precisely who most voters would like to see in office. And it's a big cost savings. What you're doing is the same thing you do with your family. I have two 13-year-olds. If we want to discuss where to go for dinner or for a meal or a vacation, you kind of sort of feel it out by asking, what is your first choice, your second, or your third? That's all this is. And you can more easily find out what most of the family or any organization would like. That's the beauty of it. Political scientists have studied this for quite some time, and it's very unanimous in the profession that this is a good method to use. It fits within the U.S. Constitution and state law. It's just that people haven't been using it formally for elections. And it's, again, it's sound. One really big advantage is what it does for rural communities. Those budgets are often more constrained. And instead of having two elections, a runoff election is an expense that is not necessary. There's no reason for it. So the two things you mainly gain by doing this is that you can find out what the voters, there may be someone who, let's say you have five candidates running, or four, or three. There may be someone who will get slightly more than some of the other candidates, but there's someone who is very objectionable to most, for example, Republicans. And that person then becomes a top candidate, and then the second one. If you use ranked choice voting, you may find out that that person would never get a second vote by anybody else other than the first one. So you get very extreme marginalized candidates who often get through that primary. And then, so it's a real simple process, and I can explain it in any detail if you have questions. For rural communities, so I would really...
Please bring it in for a landing.
I would really prefer to see... and I think would be best in the future for the state of Florida, just to not have Section 11 in there. There's really no advantage to taking it out. One thing you could do, if you want to leave it in there, at least consider taking out rural counties that are economically distressed. In Florida statute, you have an easy definition for you to do this with. It's Section 288.0656. That's 288.0656. It's economically distressed rural counties. this could be something in the future that would really help them reduce their costs.
All right, do you have time for a question?
I sure do.
Okay, Rep. Byrd, recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Professor. Are you familiar with a concept in ranked choice voting called ballot exhaustion?
Are you referring to a confusion that voters may have in using this ranked choice voting?
No, there was a study published in 2015 that reviewed 600,000 votes cast using ranked choice voting in four elections in Washington State and California that found that the winner of all four elections received less than the majority of the total votes cast because of this notion of ballot exhaustion, where people don't rank, if there are five candidates and they only rank two, then those votes get tossed out as you go along the ranked choice voting. So I just want to know if you can comment on ballot exhaustion.
Yes. What you're referring to there would be if someone only marks one person they want to vote for. Okay.
Right. But
so in ranked choice voting, what the machine does is really not much different than what you do right now. If you just vote for one person, you don't make a second or third choice, then and that person gets eliminated because they didn't get enough votes. Okay, see, under ranked choice voting, you make your first choice. If that person doesn't have a chance, they weren't even close, your second choice becomes your vote.
No, I understand how it works. My question is, do you admit that ranked choice vote or that ballot exhaustion is a defect in ranked choice voting?
It actually is not. I can understand the question. It's a very good question to ask. And this is because people just aren't used to it. If your first choice really is that unpopular amongst everyone, it doesn't get a second or third, that person doesn't get a second or third vote, I mean, they're not going to win the election anyway. They're just out.
Thank you very much. I think it sounds like a whole class or a whole lecture series
Yes.
we could have on that. But your testimony is appreciated. But we have 10 more people that would like to speak.
And if there are any other questions, I'm happy to come back up.
Excellent.
And I do think.
Thank you very much. And we'll move on now to okay. Brad Ashwell, is representing all voting local.
You.
Thank you.
You don't usually hear from too many faculty on these issues.
Mr. Ashwell, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. Good afternoon, committee members. My name is Brad Ashwell, State Director for All Voting is Local. We appreciate your efforts to improve the elections process, and we hope to work with you to improve this bill. We have a number of concerns. We do currently oppose it in its current form. We're concerned. Yeah, I'll try to be brief. The Elections, Crimes, and Security Office has come a long way since the initial version we saw in the budget proposal, but we still believe it doesn't have sufficient checks to ensure this couldn't be used for political purposes. Even in the description Representative Perez laid out, you still have the whole framework under one individual appointed by the governor. Am I getting that wrong? I'm getting negative nods from Mr. Rumbottom. In any case, we'd be very interested in seeing more protections to make sure this can't be used or weaponized in some way. We continue to see, in general, as a solution looking for a problem when it comes to this office, we'd rather see you focus on training existing investigators to develop the expertise they need, ideally requiring those investigators to have some level of experience working in a supervisor of elections office, better coordination and communication among law enforcement agencies and election officials. We believe that is currently a problem, and that would be right to address better tracking and reporting and transparency. Then we have several issues relating to the provisions, the vote-by-mail provisions. I think they've already been discussed by some of the members, but the ID requirements and the certificate envelope particularly are going to, we believe, it'll lead to more rejections, rejected ballots. We were particularly concerned about seniors, voters who are already typically marginalized and already have problems with the existing process. If you add an additional envelope in, that's going to confuse people. We think you might want to look at Duval County. They have an envelope with a flap that provides some security of the voter's information, the signature. That might provide a middle ground or some other option for you. The ID requirement, we just see that as being duplicative. I mean, they're already submitting. I mean, we kind of see what you're trying to do, but they're already submitting. You know, I was a voter. I voted by mail this last time. I'm submitting either my driver's license, state ID, or last four of my social. Once I'm providing my signature, and then we're providing this or requiring this extra hoop. And every time you add a hoop, it's going to lead to rejections. Last, we We were very concerned about raising the aggregate fines from $1,000 to $50,000. We think that's going to lead to a lot of smaller voter registration groups having to shut down and just not being able to reach the voters. And those are typically the voters that are most rooted in the community, that are most able to get to those voters that are hardest to reach. We have other concerns, but those are the top ones. I'll conclude there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And next up, we'll recognize, looks like Reverend Joe Paramore. You're recognized, sir, for a couple of minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Reverend Dr. Joe Paramore with Faith and Public Life, and we are a network of clergy and faith leaders across the state united on several matters of public policy, one of those specifically being voting rights. We have opposed SB 524, and we respectfully oppose this bill today. And while we appreciate steps forward to ensure election security, we also believe that Florida has conducted safe and secure elections, even at the voice of our governor and our Secretary of State, at how safe and secure the 2020 election cycle was. And I don't think we need to take their words for granted in this process. With more and confusing steps added to the process, it will affect, deter voting. And we in the faith community have long stood for the moral right to vote and oppose barriers to voting. I share an example pertaining specifically in Section 12. There's a concern with the new language requiring a security envelope or certificate envelope and a mailing envelopes. Adding additional steps to a process that has already proven to be effective and successful, according to our governor and secretary of state, seems redundant and frankly does not add value to the process. And our voters and our citizenry in this state needs to be valued. Asking them to include driver's license, ID, social security digits is one more opportunity to weaken the quality of our voting process. We must understand, whether we like it or not, that freedom is for everyone, not just a privileged few. We know that the underlying issues in this bill, we believe as faith leaders, is to deter, threaten, and intimidate those communities that are marginalized already. Florida voters did their part in 2020, and we all did it well. And we deserve consistency, not constant confusion and change. So I'll leave you with a passage from the book of Proverbs. I know many of you, and I know many of you that have professed to be persons of faith. And we find this passage in Proverbs 11. Victory is won through many, but whosoever puts up security for a stranger will surely suffer. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Ida Escamani from Florida Rising. You are recognized for a couple of minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try to keep it brief, and I do want to apologize to you, Chair Perez, for not having the chance to discuss our concerns with this bill. It's been a very long day, week, life, and et cetera, so we do apologize. We do oppose this bill as currently written, and I don't want to repeat too many of the points already made, but we do believe, of course, Floridians deserve a safe and convenient voting. And we fear that this bill creates new, unnecessary, and deliberate barriers to that right. On the Office of Election and Crime Security, we all agree, election officials, the Secretary of State, Florida's elections are fair and secure. Since 2020, there have been a handful of instances of voter fraud prosecuted, and these crimes are investigated and handled because we have the capacity and the systems to handle them. Creating a new office solely focused on these activities, we fear, is duplicative, and lacking those guardrails can lead to unintended consequences when it comes to the rights of voters. Regarding the third-party voter registration organizations, I think, as already noted, a lot of third-party voter registration groups are smaller, local, community-based organizations They're a very important part of our democracy. They're community-based. They're driven by folks in the community. They're small. And we fear that raising the cap on fines could lead to a chilling effect on these groups and deter them from participating in civic engagement activities, which, of course, leads to more voters exercising that constitutional right. And so just to briefly conclude, you know, the greatest threat we think that we witnessed in this most recent election cycle is the dark money scheme by consultants of Florida Empower and Light to steal Senate elections in this state via ghost candidates. And we think that should be the top topic when it comes to election security of this body. And if we do create an Office of Election Crimes and Security, we certainly hope that targeting and addressing and penalizing the entities behind that scheme would be the top priority. But this bill is currently written, it doesn't address that, and we do ask you to oppose, and we appreciate the time.
All right, thank you. And moving on to Genesis Robinson from Equal Ground, wishes to speak. Not here. Moving on to Trish Neely, League of Women Voters, is moving up. And please keep your comments to the substance of the bill. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, members. I'll keep my comments very short. What I will say is the League agrees with pretty much everything that's been said so far, and I'm not going to repeat that. As you know, voting, registration, and education are really foundational issues for us. And having a safe and secure election is certainly the on top of our minds. We do have some concerns, and I'm going to raise two, because we believe that there's some overreach in the bill, and we believe that there are some barriers created, possibly unintended, but still there. So our recent elections had minimal fraud. I think that was mentioned, and it was handled by existing law enforcement. So we're very concerned, sorry, I think I'm cutting in and out, about the need for election police. I mean, I have chilling visions of bygone days when there was intimidation in black and brown communities, and I know that that's not what we're trying to do, but I do have concerns that that's the way that some in our black and brown communities could see this, and I think that's concerning. And then we're very concerned because we register voters. It's part of what we do. We train our volunteers, and we do it right. But the prospect of a volunteer causing a $50,000 penalty, I mean, that goes beyond our annual budget for 10 years, 20 years, let alone just having it for 1 year. So those are our main points, and we would urge you to consider to discuss safe and secure ways, but we believe this is overreach, and we urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. And now David Ramba, Florida Supervisors of Elections. You're recognized, Mr. Ramba.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Perez, on behalf of Florida 67 Supervisors of Elections, we've had conversations about the concepts of this bill for the past several months. A lot of those concepts were integrated into the election security portion of it. We didn't get to see the actual words on paper till about 72 hours ago. Came out in the House and the Senate kind of about the same time. There's some similarities. There's some differences. Historically, our group has always risen to the challenge when the legislature says there are additional things we need to do. We've worked for years with Don Rubottom, who we respect and has some good ideas on how to keep and maintain the security of Florida's elections. At first glance, there's probably four items we really have to look at. Most important one for us is logistics. How do you put this together? We have a real problem with the four envelope issue. Some people think it's three envelopes. There's actually an envelope it comes into. Not only for people returning up, but we have to assemble all these. And so we believe there's some better ideas on how to do it, similar to Duval County that has the flap. We refer to it as a flap, but it's a secure flap that closes. Brevard uses it as well. They've used it for 12 years. They're not a small county. I have about 20 of them being overnighted to me, so everybody can see it if they're not familiar with it. We believe that would be an easier, much more cost-efficient, not increased postage, and do a lot of things to help us be able to figure out and help the voters be able to figure out. They're used to signing on the outside of an envelope. You would still sign on the outside of an envelope. You provide that extra information. Right now, the way it's worded, you and your spouse open up your vote-by-mail ballots to talk about how you're going to vote. There's 8 envelopes sitting there. About half of the secrecy envelopes in the state don't actually show up back when they come to our office. And under current law, if you open up a envelope, you have to certify either the signature or that it's a valid ballot before you open it. So if that envelope's on the inside, supposed to be on the inside, and you open it up to get it, and all that's there is a ballot, you don't know whose ballot that is, you don't know if it's certified, now the ballot's out and open. So I think there's some ways we can get there, but we would ask that we be able to work with the chairman and you know, folks have problems trying to fill out the oval correct. The 4-envelope thing we think could be a problem for us. We're going to meet tomorrow as a group to try to brainstorm on how to provide some selective suggestions to the chair and the committee to try to make this better. Second issue is timelines. Some of those timelines will go away with the additional, if we got rid of the additional envelope. We had 4,855 returned vote-by-mail ballots in the 2020 general election. That's an extra 5 million envelopes we'd have to open. In addition, we'll be checking an additional function. We'll be checking these 4 digits, comparing that to the Florida voter registration system, which is maintained by the state. That's just going to take extra time. For all the ballots that come in, you know, 3 or 4 days before the election, those all usually get done. Cure notices go out on signatures today. It would be a cure notice on signatures and your identifier number. We think that works, but those 5,000 that come into Pinellas County the last day on Tuesday of the election, those and processing those, it's going to take a little extra time to get the results back. Everybody wants to see it at 8:15 on election night, see if you won. We understand that, but we just hope that as we go through this, we'll be able to give you a few more selective time limitations that we would be able to meet in order to allow people to have a fair expectation that the votes were counted correctly, but there aren't any delays that are unnecessary. We still have in the election timelines for all mail ballots 6 days to count all these all mail ballot elections. We need to modify that so it matches for the regular types of elections, those timelines. That's an additional time issue. Last, our plea once again is public records. We're collecting more people's information. Now we've got the driver's license, last 4 social security number, email addresses, cell phone numbers. Representative Stevenson has House Bill 983. We've worked on it for years. We've passed it out of this committee before. Never quite made it both sides through the finish line. I think it's more and more important if you recall what occurred with the cure process, with outside interest groups texting these cell phone numbers of voters who are public, that their ballot was not received, that their signature was invalid. You need to go check. They're creating distrust in the elections. They're getting that from our own public data and really undermining the confidence people should have in the elections and how they're performed. So that's our pitch once again. Try to keep it to topic, but we always got to throw in our pitch for Representative Stevenson's bill. And with that, I'd be happy to answer your questions, Mr. Chairman.
Seeing no questions, thank you very much for your testimony. And next up is Kara Gross from American Civil Liberties. Is not here. Moving on, Karen Joke from Heritage Action of America. And you are a proponent of the bill. Recognized for a couple of minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Karen Jaroche, and I represent Heritage Action. We're a national grassroots organization with 2 million conservative activists nationwide and thousands in the state of Florida. And Heritage Action supports this bill and agrees with Florida voters that it should be easy to vote and hard to cheat. Heritage Action fully supports the specificity added to the governor's existing authority in 102.091 to appoint special officers to investigate alleged violations of election laws when it is deemed necessary to see that violators of election laws are apprehended and punished. This is necessary because, unfortunately, many alleged election crimes are not investigated by local officials when they are reported and very few prosecuted. And my source for that is a November 2021 report by the Public Interest Legal Foundation titled Safe Harbor, How Many Potential Election Crimes Languish in Florida Prosecutor Offices. We support the requirement that the officials from the Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles furnish a list of persons who presented evidence of non-citizenship in the prior month. We suggest three additional steps for additional accuracy in this regard. One is require officials to perform cross-checks of the voter registration list data set with the Systemic Alien Verification for Entitlement Program, or the SAVE program. Require Florida state courts to provide jury information on non-citizenship to officials, and some currently do, but there is no uniformity statewide on this. And a third option is to condition requests from the federal courts for voter registration and DMV list use for creating federal juries with an agreement that the federal courts notify state election officials if an individual on that list is found to be disqualified due to a felony conviction or non-citizenship status. The vast majority of Americans, 81%, fully support voter ID as a way to safeguard elections. Voter ID has been a staple for in-person voting in Florida, but not with absentee voting. Section 15 would require absentee voters to write the last four digits of their driver's license or social security number on the voter certificate. This measure would strengthen Florida's election laws by requiring voter ID for absentee voting, standardizing the process for both in-person and absentee voters. For these reasons and more, Heritage Action fully supports this committee bill before us, and I humbly urge you to vote yes on the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Lane Watkins, representing self. A couple of minutes, sir, so we can get to debate. I know we're going to have some. You're recognized.
Okay, representatives, I'm a poll worker, I'm a poll watcher, and I'm a citizen. I do a lot of door knocking for getting out the vote. I applaud you for introducing this excellent bill, and I support it. The investigative arm of this bill is urgently needed. You might want to reference the report she talked about. It give you some specifics, including at least one Florida supervisor of elections that doesn't think they have to refer criminal activity. I'd like you to add the governor's provision to prohibit haphazard unobscured drop boxes. Somebody inserted in Section 5 of the bill in the Section 2C regarding SOEs mailing out the cards for somebody who hadn't voted in the last 2 years, they put at the supervisor's discretion. That needs to be either take it out or add, but not at a minimum every odd year. I don't want to supervise. These roles are sloppy. I hate to tell you folks, I'm a poll worker, I go door knocking. They're sloppy. So we need to keep cleansing the roles. Okay, let's see. Providing the last four, the issue is to protect voters from somebody stealing their vote. Again, when I contact the public, people say, I went down to vote, and I'm told I've already voted. That's not right. So providing people who want their vote protected and not have it stolen support this. I'm a poll worker. I do signature matches all day. It's subjective. We need to introduce an objective element in this. And those four digits do that. That just makes it consistent. So I just want to close and please make these changes to the bill and continue improving it. But let's please pass it out of committee and keep moving. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Michael Johnson, not here, is a proponent of the bill. No other public comments that I see. We will move into debate. I see Representative Valdez in debate.
Thank you, Chair Smith. And you're probably going to sense a little tone of frustration. Today has been a long day. And, you know, I was distracted while trying to finish my question session with you earlier, so I just let it go. We all know that staff is the one that generates these bills. And by being told, whether you like it or not, or I like it or not, I don't appreciate that. At the end of the day, we are the legislators. And I'm going to speak to you from a personal perspective. You probably all heard this before, and you're going to get sick of me saying it. But until it sinks in, I'm first-generation American born of Cuban immigrants. No freedoms whatsoever. The biggest freedom and the biggest duty that we have as citizens of this great nation and of this state is the right to cast your vote and an attack. A more deeper way of attacking democracy is by infringing and making it a lot more difficult to cast your vote. Having several envelopes to have to comply with more information of your own personal information out there. I get scam calls all the time wondering how are people getting my cell phone number when I don't give it out. But then again, I am an elected official and a public figure. I get kind of insulted when I see things like this, and it makes me feel as though I, as a part of this body, am doing something wrong because I advocate for the freedoms that all citizens should have. I'm concerned about the senior citizens. I'm concerned of the inability of being able to update your signature because folks will not be informed. We need a balance. I don't see a balance. And I'm just so disappointed in the pieces of legislation that we are seeing and how we claim that we're doing things in the name of freedom. And I wonder what the meaning of freedom is, because I sometimes feel that my freedoms that I have enjoyed, that we have enjoyed, and the fact that my family left their family to come to a nation that is supposed to be the land of the free, and that it doesn't feel that way. Does it mean that, did it matter that my family didn't have all of their children together and was able to raise their children together because of a regime that impeded it to happen? Walk a day in my shoes, and then maybe you'll understand why I feel the way I feel about these types of legislation. I know where this is. This is going to go probably party nine. I know it. I know I'm going to be on the losing end again because they can. And again, I think that we need to be mindful of how we speak to each other, because whether you like it or not, I am a state representative. And it is important that the voices of our communities are heard, are respected, and are honored. There are ways currently right now in which if there is a crime that has been done, that individual will wind up getting prosecuted or punished. We have cases right now down south that, you know, are still in litigation. I can't wait to see what the punishment will be. Is it going to be the same punishment as another individual that may have caused the same crime? Oh, we'll see about that. Representative Perez, I'm sorry. I cannot support this today because again, I know what my family sacrificed to come to this land of the freedom that we have enjoyed. And the more we tamper, make voting more difficult for the whole, our democracy is an attack. And for that reason, I cannot support this bill.
Thank you, Rep. And in debate, Rep. Bartleman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Perez. And thank you, Chair Smith. Just confusing my chairs a minute. Okay. So I spoke with you about this morning. You did make yourself very available. You answered your call. I have, we just got the bill, so you can imagine how hard it is to go through. But I did speak to you about some of my greatest concerns, and I'm going to just talk about them now. And I'm hoping, because I think that this is at least the ones I'm talking about now, this is something that can be fixed between now and a floor vote. When I have a problem and I need to solve it, I look for the simplest solution. You mentioned that there was a problem with the flap covering the signature and that the secrecy envelope and then the secrecy envelope with the four-digit number was going to be the solution. That is killing a fly with a sledgehammer. That is not the simplest solution. You could change the signature placement. You can revise the ballot. There's even an example ballot that's in another county that you can use to solve that problem if that is truly a problem. And if you say it's a problem, I believe it's a problem. But why, to solve that problem, create a four-envelope system? And then the four-digit number, that doesn't help you solve your problem. And quite honestly, I can recite the four-digit numbers of my daughters, my ex-husband, and my mom, the last four digits of their socials. So that doesn't add to your security. The signature is your security. That's your security. Not because I can put somebody's four-digit number on an envelope. So I disagree with that point. So last session we talked about this, and we have to and by the way, it was ironic that we had a huge bill to fix a voting system that the governor declared to be the most successful vote ever, but that's okay. So what I am asking for, and I mean this in the sincerest way, there's a different solution you can use to get to the to solve the problem involving the signature with the flap. This is very difficult for anyone. Four envelopes, signatures, and I know that your answer is there's a cure. You have 48 hours, you have 5 o'clock in 2 days. Okay, I just think about my one condo, like if you think about the aging population or even the younger population who isn't always paying attention, I miss things all the time. There's no way in a huge county that you're gonna be able to cure all of those signatures in a 48-hour period. And again, if you involve, we don't even know what's going to go. We don't even know what's going to go into the cure of those signatures. Are they going to have to come down and show what they're doing? Because that's not enough time to do a mail. Do we really want them to cure it over the internet or on the phone? The only way they're going to be able to cure that is to be in person. And this additional hurdle for our seniors who are homebound, they're not going to be able to get there to cure it. And 48 hours is not enough time when you think about the volume of people voting. So on this one issue, I would ask, if you could find a simpler solution to solve the covering of the flap with a signature, that would help ensure that our greatest generation and many other Americans have their vote counted. So that's what I'm asking of you. You know, I have other issues with the bill, but I'm strictly sticking to what we spoke about, and I'm going to come back to you with the other issues. And I hope you're open to another solution, like the solution that was given today. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rep. And moving to Rep. Tant in debate.
Thank you. I echo many of, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo many of my colleague Rep. Bartleman's concerns. I also, as I always do, bring to the discussion people with disabilities. And one of the things I am concerned about with the multiple envelopes is for say, a blind voter, which envelope is which for them. And I know some SOEs have had a raised bubble for this is where the signature goes so they can find it. Then there are others that just will accept a ballot with a signature written anywhere. I mean, not a ballot, but an envelope within it, the signature anywhere. My own son, I can tell, we vote by mail. I can tell that when, as we continue to get voter mail in my house, this is the last signature verified because he's got a funky signature. So it's kind of fun because I still get mail even though the rest of us have voted. So obviously that is, I am concerned because I don't want people with disabilities who have just as much right to vote independently and with dignity as the rest of us. I want to make sure that they are not forgotten in all of this. And so, and I also have not had a chance to speak to my own SOE at length. He would have been here, but he had a class tonight. And so I want to make sure that he has an opportunity to chat with you. So I'm going to want to bring him in to either Mr. Rama's meeting or with you or what have you. So that's I want to just put that on the table. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. And we're moving to Rep. Daly, followed by Rep. Byrd. You're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Chair Perez, I appreciate what you're trying to do. The overall concept, I think we all agree that we want free and fair elections in Florida. And certainly where there's work to be done, I can see where, you know, we need to do it. I'll tell you, I have a couple of concerns with the bill as it exists today, the first of which goes along my line of questioning from earlier, and that's that, you know, I don't know that creating a new government bureaucracy, I sound like somebody on the other side of my aisle here, is the right answer. It seems to me that we've been able to root out election irregularities, and that's as recently as today, another one came to light. And so, you know, my concern is creating this whole new entity at taxpayer expense when the system seems to be working today. If there's an opportunity to make it better, certainly I can see why we would go in that direction, but maybe there's things we can do with the existing apparatus. And secondly is my concern with making it more difficult to vote. If you all remember back to last legislative session, I shared with you the story of trying to get my 93-year-old grandmother, who was in a rehab facility at the time, ballot signed off correctly and turned in and vote counted. And the jumps and the hoops and everything that I had to go through just to do that showed me that, darn it, I think our process works. Much to the same point that Rep. Tant was making, you know, there's a process and you follow it and the votes count. And I think my concern here, and I know you'll continue, Chair Perez, to work with the supervisors of election, and as I'm sure you already have in part, but you know, these folks are the boots on the ground. These are the folks who are actually seeing the process of running an election. And I remember somebody last session, when we were debating the election bill saying, well, you know, what do the supervisors know? We're the legislature. Well, sure, our name goes on the ballot and people check the box next to our name and that's why we're here. Okay, cool. But show of hands, how many of you have run an election? How many of you know what it means to actually go through and count, put the packets together, put everything together that is going out and then coming back in? And, oh, by the way, we don't want our election results next week. We don't want our election results 2 weeks from now, verified and good to go. We want them in an hour and a half, right? We want them that evening, that by midnight at the latest, right? And so I would say, you know, I'd like to see a list of recommendations from the supervisors of election on how to make the process better, if there are ways to do so. Ways to make it more secure. That's the kind of policy I'd like to see. And so look, I was able to dig up a couple of quotes that I utilized during debate on last year's election bill, and I know Chair Engolia is very excited to hear them again. So I just want to share them with you all, and I'm curious, you know, a couple of the speakers that came up today to support this bill would agree. Whether you call it vote by mail or absentee voting in Florida, the election system is safe and secure, tried and true. Florida's voting system has been cleaned up. This is somebody I don't really see eye to eye on with much. That was former President Donald Trump. To date, we've not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. Most claims of fraud are very particularized to a particular set of circumstances or actors or conduct, and they're not systemic allegations. That's former Attorney General Bill Barr. And you already heard it earlier, Governor DeSantis called our election in November, the smoothest and most successful election of any state. We did it right, the governor said. So awesome. I you know, hey, if we didn't have any problems and we ran a free and fair election, and some would say the freest and fairest, we must be doing something right. To the extent that we can, I agree with you, Chair, to the extent that we can make things better, let's do that. But let's do that with guidance and direction from the folks who are actually running the elections, year in and year out, the supervisor's election. So I'm going to be down today, but I look forward to hopefully being able to support this in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Rep. Byrd, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Chairman. And Chairman Perez, I really want to thank you for your leadership on this issue. And you know, as to the comment that staff writes these bills, I don't know where that comes from, because I know that in the 6 years that I've been here, I've worked with Chairman Engolia on elections law. I've talked to Chair Perez about it. I've talked to many of you about elections law. I mean, that's an area of the law that I work in and I practice. I'm in touch with experts around the country, with activists around the country that are sharing information on what's happened in other states. So, I can see many members' fingerprints on this piece of legislation as these conversations have been had over the last many years. With respect to the fact that, yeah, we did have a great election in Florida in 2020, but that didn't mean it was a perfect election, because no elections are perfect. Talk to your supervisors of elections. They'll tell you that. There's fraud in every election. And how do I know that? Because I've been doing this since 1998 as a poll worker, as a poll watcher, spending hundreds of hours in Florida and other states watching people vote, watching the canvassing process. And last year in debate on the floor, when I said that, you know, no one challenged me when I said there's fraud in every election. It was last year they said, well, there was an overwhelming fraud. Well, that's what we're trying to prevent, is any fraud, but certainly overwhelming fraud, and adding these types of provisions. I mean, we do have dirty rolls. Every state has dirty rolls. There are people on the rolls that should not be there, and we are adding provisions to ensure that our rolls are as accurate as possible. With respect to prosecutions, I have referred people that I've seen commit voter fraud, and they were not prosecuted. Why? Because the winner of the election wants to move on and get on with their office and doesn't feel like prosecuting it, and the loser sounds like sour grapes. So there are many, many instances all over the country of state attorneys who refuse to prosecute election fraud unless it's of such a level that it gets public attention that they will do it. But there's lots of low-level fraud that happens. Here's another. There were two truths in the last election. There were nationwide irregularities, call it fraud, whatever you want to call it. But also, here's the other good news. In 2020, more Black Americans than ever voted, more Asian Americans than ever voted, more Hispanic Americans than ever voted, more people than ever are voting in America. There is no voter suppression. There is no one. Find one instance of someone who wanted to vote that could not. It does not happen. It is not true. People are allowed to vote and can vote, and we are giving them every opportunity. But what we do need is to ensure that our elections, that we have integrity in the election process, and that people have confidence. The number one issue that I face when I go and talk to my constituents, it's probably different from other people, what are we doing to ensure that my vote counts? I'm not confident that my vote will count. How can you ensure, Rep. Byrd, that my vote will count in the next election? This is how we're doing it, because yes, we ran good elections. Yes, we have good supervisors of elections in Florida. But we can always do better. We can always let our voters know that we are doing our job and ensuring and learning from other states, learning from the mistakes of other states to ensure that that doesn't happen in Florida. And I would ask your support for this great piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. And moving to Rep. Thompson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, you've already heard that the governor currently has the authority to appoint individuals to investigate elections crime. That's already in statute. He already has that authority. And we're being asked today to create an Office of Elections Crime and Security, which is an expensive operation and an unnecessary operation. The governor applauded the 2020 election as one of the most efficient, the most fair, the most secure elections in the state of Florida. And the supervisors of elections got Senate Bill 90 in the last session. And yes, they do step up, they meet the challenges, but they have a certain level of fatigue. And you heard Mr. Ramba say that they have some grave concerns about this particular piece of legislation. And according to Mark Early, who is the supervisor of elections here in Leon County, the supervisors have not asked for this legislation. They do not support this legislation. And they are the people who administer our elections. And I think that their voices should be heard, and their perspectives ought to be sought without coming up with legislation in a vacuum that does not include them. I think we just have to call this what it is. It's part of a nationwide orchestrated effort to make it more difficult for people to vote because there was dissatisfaction with the outcome of the 2020 election. That's what this is. And when you talk about elections and making sure that people who were shut out, who now have access, that they should continue to have access, that's very, very important, very important. And I don't see that this bill gets us there. And under this bill, we'll have multiple law enforcement agencies responsible for the same job. And nothing clear about who does what or the lines of communication or anything of that sort. So I'm asking today, we keep imposing all of these edicts from Tallahassee on the supervisors of elections who have to actually administer the elections. And so I'm asking that we not pass this legislation and that we get the supervisors of elections to give some input. And if there are changes needed, what are they and how should they be accomplished? And I cannot support this legislation. It needs a lot of work. I just saw it for the first time yesterday. And as the ranking member, I would love to have had an opportunity to get with the chair to talk about it, but I did not have that opportunity. So for those reasons, I am down on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. And Rep. Ngola, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair, for bringing this. And I want to thank you, the Speaker, and the Governor for leading on this issue. So let's be clear here. The safest form of voting is in-person voting. That is clearly the safest form of voting. But the prevalence of vote by mail increases opportunities, and it increases the chance that there is going to be fraud in an election. And this, just don't take my word for it. I think it was 2012, or might have been before that, there was a grand jury that convened in Miami-Dade, and one of their suggestions was to clean up the vote-by-mail process. We're not saying this in a vacuum. So outside of us going to vote in person, we have to make sure the vote-by-mail process has to be as efficient and with the utmost election integrity so people have faith in our elections. You know, I heard it said here that it's because the past president lost an election, they want to do that. No, that is not true. Every 2 years, we come up with an election bill to try to clamp down on things that we have seen in years before. And right now, and I believe it was a Gallup poll that came out that said that NPAs, nonpartisans, a majority of them now think that there was fraud in the last election and will continue to be in election. So these are our constituents. Our constituents think, and rightly so, that there was fraud in our elections. But here's another thing, and I want you guys to ask yourselves this question. Can you say with 100% certainty in every election that all the votes cast were cast by people who were legally able to vote in that election? And I am going to tell you that absolutely not. Every single county in the state of Florida, there is election fraud. Now, some of it is egregious. Some of it is just outright ballot harvesting, like we've seen with the Balloteros in Miami-Dade County. Some of it is people who are voting in our elections who no longer live in the state of Florida. They're getting ballots. They live in Arizona or California or Maine or New York. That is absolutely happening. And that's why cleaning up the voter rolls is so important. Just don't take my word for it. Do it yourself. Just go and pull all the data from your local supervisor of elections and ask whoever received absentee ballots, who the ballot got mailed to other states, and then check to see if they own property in your county. A lot of them will have owned property, and there will be non-homesteaded property. They'll be rented out. They probably don't live in the state of Florida, but the ballots are going elsewhere, so we're having people vote in our elections. This is actually happening. And why having an elections crime unit is so important is this. You guys have seen it. I know Chair Byrd has seen it. I know Chair Perez has seen it. We know that elections fraud is going on in the counties. But the problem is that who are they reporting to? They are reporting to the supervisor of elections, who are then asking you to report it to the prosecutor. And the problem is this, is they're buried. They are extremely busy. The supervisor of elections are busy doing pre-election audits, the election post-election audits. The prosecutor is sitting, they have a caseload. A lot of them are overworked as public servants. But what people forget is that, you know, they put this stuff on the back burner. And in addition to that, election law is a very highly specialized form of law. It is, somebody just can't pick up Florida statutes and start try to determine what is election fraud and what is not election fraud. And then to actually go after it and prosecute it, I think is important because, as I stated before, it is happening in every single county, in every single election. The question we need to ask is, how much fraud are we willing to tolerate in an election? For this state, representative, zero. And we always need to strive to have the least amount of fraud as possible with the most access as possible in elections. That is the recipe for success. And I personally believe that the state of Florida has been leading on election integrity. Every election cycle that passes, we are seeing more and more ingenious ways to get around election law to get people to cast what I would say would be illegal votes. So, you know, I hear this is that, you know, election, you tell me how many instances of election fraud have you seen? And the answer is we'd probably see a lot more prosecuted if we had somebody dedicated to collect the information and to go after the bad actors. You're right, the prosecution amount is low, and we're only prosecuting the most egregious of crimes. It doesn't mean that election fraud doesn't exist. We're just not prosecuting them. And the threat of prosecution will cut down on the election fraud itself. I hear it every year. We have the smoothest elections. We have smoothest elections. And why are we putting up an election bill when we ran a smooth election? That is a false question. Just because we ran a smooth election does not mean that we've had problems. We are identifying the problems in these elections. And when we put up these elections bill, we were trying to head off the problems that we see in our own elections. And in addition, it's not just our elections, because we're seeing what people are doing in other states. And we're taking preemptive action to make sure that it doesn't happen in this state, because we want to have our citizens know that this legislature is doing everything they can to make the safest and most securest elections possible, because they do not want their vote disenfranchised. And that's important. Couple other points. We need to probably start getting away from signature matching, which, as one person said, it is clearly subjective, and we need to do something objective, like some personal identification number. That is installing faith in our election to make sure that the person who's casting that ballot with a unique identifier is going to ensure that that ballot is actually cast in the first place. Talked about curing ballots. Yes. The state of Florida has an ability, we give people the ability to cure the ballot. But it is misleading to say that there's only 48 hours to cure the ballot. If you are one of the few who get your ballot 40 days out from election, 35 days out from election, you fill it out, you send it in, and it needs to be cured, they don't wait until the end of the election to ask you to cure your ballot. Supervisors of elections do a very good job of getting the information out there. So if you cast your ballot one day before the end of the election, yes, you're going to have 48 hours to cure your ballot, but there's still an opportunity to cure. This legislature has been maligned for years for trying to make our elections secure as possible. This idea that we are making it hard to vote in our elections is just bunk. We have up to 40 days to 40 days of voting in this state. Three separate ways that you can vote: in person at the polls on election day, in person early voting, and voting by mail. We have more access to the polls than a lot of other states. It's about time this state starts getting recognized for the things that we are doing when it comes to election integrity. Florida will continue to lead on this issue. Chairman Perez, I thank you for bringing this good bill forward.
All right, thank you. Seeing no more debate, you have about 30 minutes to close, Chair. I know you won't need it all, but we're here, and you're recognized to close on your good bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Smith. I appreciate the 30 minutes, but I can assure you that it will not take me 30 minutes to close. Members, the right to vote is one of the most fundamental aspects of our republic. It's essential that our voting process works efficiently and securely. Florida has come a long way, and as many of you mentioned, gone are the days of the 2000 election, but our vast improvement should not breed apathy nor complacency. Future votes are too important to fall to fraud or manipulation simply because we were too busy patting ourselves on the back for past successes. The bill before us is a continuation of the want to make our process better, more secure, and more accessible to everyone. Anybody who can legally vote in our state should be able to do so in a multitude of ways. However, with these new opportunities, the responsibility rests on us to ensure that they are secure and free from fraud. Members, I humbly ask for your support on this bill. As always, if there is some constructive criticism that you all would like to give to me outside of this committee, my door is always open to you. But with that, Chair Smith, I close.
All right, thank you. Sanjay, will you please call the roll?
Representative Perez.
Yes.
Thompson. Smith.
Yes.
Representative Barterman.
No.
Brannon.
Yes.
Byrd.
Yes.
Clemens.
Yes.
Daley.
No.
Grawl. Yes. Ngoglia. Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Coster, excuse. Representative LaMarca?
Yes.
Representative Roach?
Yes.
Silvers?
No.
Stevenson?
Yes.
Tant?
No.
Valdez?
No.
Representative Grant?
Out of six. Okay, by your vote, the bill passes. And as the chair moves back up to take his seat, I will pass the gavel back to the chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chair Smith. And members, I appreciate your patience today and your feedback and your response to the bills that we had. They were obviously very important to all of us. That being said, Representative Roach moves that we close the meeting, and the meeting is adjourned.